Good morning, everybody. Hey, we are glad you are here. I'm not preaching today. Exactly right. We've got a guy today. They just love me here, Jeff. We've got a guy here today whose name is Jeff Kuhn. Jeff is the development director at FAME. FAME is one of our, FAME, by the way, is a medical missionary agency. They have medical teams literally all over the globe, and Jeff has been with them for about 5 years as their development director. He's been preaching for about 35 years before that, and so he is a seasoned preacher, and you will be glad that you came today because Jeff is a really, really good preacher. Jeff is married, has 4 kids, and I believe 1 daughter-in-law.
That's right.
Yeah, and Jeff mentioned just a little bit ago, and I just do mean a little bit ago, that they used to live in Wisconsin. Viroqua, Wisconsin, and he says, you know what, moving down to Indiana wasn't bad because I don't have to heat my house with wood anymore. I says, yeah. I said, man, at first you think, heating your house with wood, that's a lot of fun, And he says, yeah. He says, I had 2 log splitters, but they left on me. I said, what do you mean they left? He goes, yeah, they went off to college. So at any rate, Jeff Kuhn's our preacher today, and I am so glad that he's here today. He's preached before us before, and you will get a lot out of what Jeff has to say. Let's welcome him to Fairfield, shall we?
Nagawu's a 10-year-old little boy, lives in the Himalayan foothills, and it's exactly what you guess it might be like, a little village, grass hut, thatched roof, little wooden bamboo posts, but he and his younger brother were going to get some honey from where they'd seen a beehive. And so to acquire the honey, they were going to smoke out the bees, and they'd seen their dad do it before, but they didn't pay close enough attention, and they used gasoline instead of kerosene. And there was a huge explosion, which caused Nagawu to have terrible burns that fused his leg together in such a way that it wouldn't even bend. Nagawu's mom had heard that a village that she knew about had a FAME short-term team there. FAME sends short-term teams of medical and non-medical people. We actually only want about 1/3 of the team of 15 to be medical people, because there's others of us who can tell the gospel story, treat, listen to people's things while the doctors and nurse practitioners and nurses do the medical care that they can do. And so one of our short-term teams, she'd heard, had been in this village, and so she got her son, and they got this one crutch that they had acquired, and they began to take that, and they began to walk to this village that they had heard about. Nagawu and his mom began to walk the first day. First thing in the morning, they got up early the best they could, and they walked all day, day one. They got to a place to sleep on the side of the road in the jungle, and they walked all day, day two. They did that again for days 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 full days of walking all day to get to the river, where they got in a canoe that had a motor on it. They shot upstream for a whole day, got out there, spent the night, got in the back of a pickup truck, and in the back of that pickup truck, they then drove for a full day to get to the village where I told you that a FAME short-term team had been. Key word being short-term team. She'd heard about it. Our team had only been there a week, and they had traveled for 9 days to get access to health care. They got there, and the mission partner that was there, they have a really small clinic there, not enough to take care of the needs that they had, but they contacted us, and we were able to send them the money it took to actually fly that young man to Yangon. Now, this little boy from the village had experienced a lot of things. He thought that the boat ride was fast. And then he got in a plane and ended up in Yangon, had surgery. That isn't our normal model for care, but I want you to hear that story to get the connection that 400 million people in the world have no access within a day to health care. I live on the south side of Indianapolis, and when I leave my house and I go to where FAME's warehouse and offices are, it's 18 miles. On my way from my house to FAME's offices, I pass 11 ERs or urgent cares. We have access to things that the rest of the world doesn't even have. And so FAME partners on your behalf with people around the world who have gone on the mission field for a lot of different reasons. Some have gone for church planting. We found that medical evangelism can eliminate an obstacle called the lack of access to health care that allows churches to be planted. We have one partner that we helped them in 1984 to acquire an ambulance. We didn't hear from them for 20-something years. Last year, they came and they said, we want to apologize for two things. Number one is we really haven't told you what has happened this last year with the ambulance. And number two, it's dead and we need another one. And so we said, tell us about it. They had, with that ambulance as a mobile clinic, they had gone to village after village and would treat people in the name of Jesus and share the gospel. And in that time frame, from last year back to 2004, they had planted 60 churches. 60 churches had started because of this evangelism through healthcare that went into these little villages and fishing villages off the coast of the Bay of Bengal in India. When we partner with these mission partners on your behalf, we help them eliminate an obstacle that is preventing people from hearing the gospel. We partner with Pioneer Bible translators so that their leaders, the translators, have the medical equipment, supplies, and training they need to go in. We partner with people who start orphanages, and they realize we have to help with them with care. We're helping an orphanage now this year with medical equipment, supplies, and putting a clinic in their orphanage. Their orphanage started because they had a knock on the door of their seminary. Now, a seminary is a place where you train some people, to men to be preachers. And they had a place prepared for about 12 people to be trained and stay overnight and be a semester there to be part of their training. And they got a knock on the door about a year ago in the middle of the night, and they said, hey, we have some children we rescued from trafficking. And these guys are just there training preachers, not doing medical evangelism. They're not doing anything that way. They got a knock at the door, and they said, you know, we have some children we just rescued from trafficking. Can we have them stay here overnight? And they said, of course. So the guy telling me the story basically said they turned around and went, and 152 girls walked in that night, and that they had just rescued. They now have a health care need for these girls that they're rescuing, and boys too, that now they have an orphanage for, that they're giving them care and helping them to get started, so we're helping them set up a clinic. So all kinds of missionaries go to the field for great reasons, and many of them find that there's an obstacle to the gospel that can be eliminated by meeting this healthcare need. And here's what's exciting about it. Jesus did the same strategy. Jesus healed people and told the good news. He healed people and shared the gospel. He healed the people and told them who he was. I was recently reading through the book of Matthew, and sometimes when you read the gospels, you have a number of times like I have, and you kind of dig in a little deeper, you look for things. And I was reading Matthew chapter 5, verse 1. Matthew chapter 5, and we're going to look in Matthew 4 and 8 and 9. We're going to look at right on each side of today the Sermon on the Mount, we call it. Matthews 5, 6, and 7 is the Sermon on the Mount. And the Sermon on the Mount begins that Jesus saw something. I thought, I've never noticed that word saw before. And so I thought, well, let me look at all the times that Matthew, a real detail guy, he's a tax collector, let me look at all the times that he used the word saw. So I went back a little ways, and in Matthew chapter 4, I began to see where Matthew uses this word, Jesus saw, and then he says something Jesus saw. Matthew chapter 4 is the first time I saw it. See that used there? That he observed it, that he I saw the word saw. And in Matthew chapter 4, verse 18 says, as he was walking along the Sea of Galilee, Jesus saw. So I underlined and circled that word. Two brothers, Simon, who's called Peter, and his brother Andrew, and they were casting the net into the sea, for they were fishermen. Follow me, Jesus said, and I will make you fish for men. Immediately they left their nets and followed him. Going on from there, he saw, and Matthew is pointing out something here, I thought. And Jesus is seeing people. He isn't just bumping it. He's seen them. And so I thought, well, what's this word saw mean? And I dig in, And it wasn't just that glancing observation word. This is a notice people. You ever had it when you see something for the first time? There's a deeper meaning to you. Oh, I care about this. I saw it finally. That's that word. You with me? Okay? And so he says Jesus saw two other brothers, James, the son of Zebedee, and his brother John. And he called them, and they followed them. The first thing I noticed that Jesus saw was ready disciples. Matthew chapter 9, verse 9, Matthew records his own call of Jesus. He says this, as Jesus went on from there, he saw. I love that Matthew noted that Jesus saw him. Matthew was someone that people hated. He's a tax collector. He was a rebel against them, really, in a way. And Jesus saw Matthew sitting in the toll booth, and he said, follow him, and he got up and followed him. Jesus sees ready disciples. He can notice when we are in a place that we can be used by him for his purposes. So the first time Matthew uses this word, he saw some ready disciples, okay? Next time it jumps out that Matthew uses that word is Jesus saw the crowds. Matthew chapter 5 verse 1 is the first place that I noticed it. Matthew 5 verse 1, Jesus saw the crowds, it says, that the Sermon on the Mount begins. And so he went up on the mountainside and he sat down and began to teach them, saying, and then we have the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus saw the crowds. He noticed the large needs around him. It's repeated a bunch of times on the crowds. He saw the crowds of hurting and sick people. In chapter 4, verse 23 and 24, immediately after he got the sets of brothers, it says he began to go all over Galilee in verse 23, teaching in the synagogues, preaching the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and sickness. And he says, so they brought to him all those who were afflicted, those suffering from various diseases and intense pains and demon-possessed and epileptics and paralytics, and he healed them. Large crowds followed him from Galilee, the Decapolis, Jerusalem, Judea, and beyond the Jordan. What are we seeing? Jesus saw large crowds of hurt and sick people. It lists all these diseases there. And then it ends with this amazing statement, and he healed them. Matthew is just a detail guy. I expected, you'd expect Matthew to be, say there were 73, or something like that. He's a numbers guy. He is a crowd. He just said he healed them. Some translations say he healed them all. So I looked up what the word all means. And do you know what I found out? It means all. It does. And so Jesus sees the crowds of people. Then Matthew 8, verse 18, we just have a couple more times he saw the crowds. Verse 18 of Matthew 8. And when Jesus saw a large crowd, he gave order for them to go to the other side of the sea. In Matthew chapter 9, we have verse 36. It says, and when he saw the crowds, he felt compassion for them because they are distressed and dejected like sheep without a shepherd. A lot of times I think we see the crowd and we just don't even know what to do. We see the crowd and we're just overwhelmed by the crowd. Jesus wasn't. He met their needs. He cared about their needs. I just wanted to encourage you today that you guys as a church in central Indiana are partnering with other missionaries, but also with FAME, and you are impacting crowds. This last year, FAME served in 43 countries, working with 63 different mission partners. That's a lot of people, okay? We sent $700,000 worth of medical equipment and supplies. And I can tell you how big of an impact that your church had. Now, we do three things. Focus on three things. FAME does. First, we give grants to missionaries so they can build hospitals or clinics or acquire mobile clinics. That's the first thing we do. We give grants from the funds that we receive. We give these grants out. And amazing things happening. We just approved our 206th hospital clinic or mobile clinic. 206 hospitals, clinics, or mobile clinics have been built or acquired because of you. Isn't that amazing? And so we give grants like that. The second thing we do is we gather medical equipment supplies and acquire it used, and then we ship it overseas. And then the third thing we do is we send the short-term teams. And so those are the three focuses FAME does. And in all those things, we worked with in 43 countries last year, 63 partners. We interviewed them, and we said, how many people did you treat in the name of Jesus? And how many people did you tell the gospel to? And we had never done that before. A couple years ago, we started doing this. And we found out that last year, over 1 million people heard the gospel because of you and your partnership with FAME. Yeah, that's applause. That's great. But 1 million people. And here's the thing that we said. Now, we want to know the people that you can track them. You know their name, and they're being discipled by somebody. That's amazing. And so every year, we believe in the last few, around 1 million people have been hearing the gospel and treated. We talked to one partner. It's a hospital in the north coast of the Philippines. Right now, on Friday, we just sent a shipping container to them that'll get there in June of medical equipment supplies. There's a generator that we just helped purchase to them. We sent them the money. It's going to arrive the 1st of May because their electrical grid is terrible. They've grown without preparation, and every time the typhoons come through, boom, the electricity's gone. And you're on a ventilator in a hospital or any other medical equipment, electricity is really helpful. So they're wheeling people to, they have one generator now. They wheel people, all the people come into this one wing in the hospital where the generator can keep that those things going. So there's huge Cummins engine generator coming in May. But this hospital, we said, how many people did you treat and how many people did you share the gospel with? And they wrote back, we treated 14,111. We shared the gospel with 14,111. And so that's the impact you guys have. And it happens because there's obstacles to the gospel that need to be eliminated. And sometimes you and I can be that type of obstacle eliminator. We can be the ones that take them down instead of build them up. I was at a meeting of business leaders in northwest Indianapolis, over off in 86th Street area is where I ended up going. And I was meeting near that area. And this guy named Matt said, Jeff, I think, if I understand what you do, I think you need to talk to, and he named a guy who a counseling ministry had just acquired a new building just off 86th Street in one of those industrial parks. And he said, they have some medical stuff that they don't know what they're going to do. I said, okay. So I made contact and went over there and met him. I got to the front lobby and walked in, and the building was kind of unique. The name had been taken off because they just acquired it. And they weren't operating in any way yet. They weren't working. They were just there to meet me. And so I started to walk through the building, and I said, so what is the story of this building you bought and the equipment? And he said that 8 doctors had put together a group to create a surgery center here on the northwest side of Indianapolis. And I don't know the terrible ramifications for those 8 doctors, their families and partners, but something happened that they went bankrupt as a business before they even opened. And I walked through a building with 4 surgical suites of equipment that had never been used, and that this counseling ministry bought, that came with the building when they bought it. And so we walked through the building a little bit and just trying to decide, well, you know, I started realizing I'm looking at multiple millions of dollars worth of equipment, 3 or 4. I don't estimate for us. I was guessing randomly from what I did know. And we got kind of through the thing. I said, well, what is your plans for it? How do you want to? He said, well, our board would like to get some money for this. We're a nonprofit organization too. Our board would like to get some money for this couple millions, maybe $4 million worth of equipment. I was guessing in my head looking at it. And I thought, there is no way we can do anything to get this amount of equipment. And because FAME gets donated equipment. So doctors, hospitals, clinics, here in central Indiana mainly, some places around the country ship it to us and we ship it around the world, but mostly central Indiana, they an x-ray machine works on Friday and they take it out and put in the new one Monday, we'll send that to another country and that thing will work for 20 more years. You know, I mean, we just keep them using it. So we get equipment donated to us. It's the only way we get equipment. So we walked through, and he said, well, we do, my board really wants us to get something for this. And I just thought, well, I better ask. It's not going to be possible to do anything, but I better ask. And so how much? And so he hemmed and hawed a little bit and real slow. And finally he said, well, I think $10,000. Well, I usually would not jump at the chance to spend $10,000, right? That's a lot of money. But I knew what was in this building. I said, well, let me make some calls. We'll talk to some people. Needless to say, what an amazing provision. What I didn't know is that that was September of 2019. What I didn't know, and this is where you can play that video that goes along with as I tell the story, is that in August of 2019, our resource director had gotten a contact from a guy in Mozambique. Now, Mozambique is southern Africa, right on the coast. Madagascar is just off the coast from it. So that's Mozambique right down there. And they had started in 2003 to build a hospital that they wanted to have a surgery center in. And they worked on it for years, obviously. 2003 till 2019, they got to the place in 2019, finally after they'd done the site work, and they built it and had teams come build, had local workers build. And they did everything they could. And they'd all these years they'd been building since 2003. 2019, they got to the place that they said, we're looking for surgical suite. We're looking for lights and all the things. They named it. And we just need to acquire those. Well, August of 2019, Barry said, we don't have anything like that, but I'll keep my eyes out. So I walked through a building with four of them in it. Didn't even know about Barry's conversation. I went back and told him what we had. And he said, hospital in Haiti told me about needed one, and this one in Mozambique needed some. So we disassembled it out of that Northwest Indianapolis offices, got it shipped to San Antonio. They shipped it to Mozambique. And in March, the first week of March of 2020, all the equipment and supplies are in this hospital ready to open, and they have the government worker coming through to approve their building, endorse it, and certification for them to open as a hospital. He's walking through this hospital, and he approves everything. He says, you're great. He has his little clipboard, and he says, now, everything's good here. Everything's ready to go. I have one other question for you. He said, you've heard about there's like a virus that's hit in other parts of the country, right? And of course they had. And this is March of 2020. We were all in that place. We were just kind of hearing about it. And he said, would it be possible for you guys, could you get the equipment to be able to be a COVID-19 treatment site for those who get seriously ill? And he said, well, let me see. So he contacted us, and we shipped him a ventilator or two, and all the oxygen equipment to go with it. And shipped to them, so by April, they opened, not only had they opened as a surgery center, but they opened at the ability to treat seriously ill COVID patients. We did not know, until we found out in June of last year, that they weren't just a COVID-19 site. They were the only COVID-19 site for a city of 1.5 million people and the region surrounding it. God had started a project in 2003 that was ready for the summer of 2020. That's the kind of control he has over the ways we give and we open doors. And here's the thing that's amazing about that is, you know what? Matt was the tool that God used to tell me about a counseling ministry to eliminate an obstacle to the gospel. You and I have been at times, sometimes we know about it, sometimes we don't know, but we also can be the tool that God uses, the person that God uses to cause a miracle to happen, like I just told. Just by saying something to someone, telling somebody something, we can have that kind of impact. Jesus saw crowds of people who were sick and distressed. But you know, Jesus also saw ones who needed healing. He saw vulnerable ones who needed healing. Right after he'd called Peter and Andrew, James and John, after he preached the Sermon on the Mount, he went into Capernaum. And when he went down to Capernaum, this is Peter's hometown, they went to Peter's house. And it says in Matthew chapter 8, verse 14, Jesus went into Peter's house, and Jesus saw, there's that word again, his mother-in-law lying in bed with a fever. So he touched her hand, and the fever left her. Then she got up and began to serve him. And when evening came, they brought to him many who were demon-possessed. And he drove out the spirits and the word and healed all who were sick. So Jesus sees the crowds. He's not overwhelmed by it. He sees ways to respond to it, but he still can care for one. In Matthew chapter 9, verse 20, it says that a woman came up to him and touched his cloak, touched his garment. It says that Jesus turned and saw her. I love that Matthew's pointing these out. He didn't just turn and say something. He turned and he saw her. He locked eyes with her. He noticed her. Have you done that before, where there's someone that maybe has a desperate need and you kind of look down or you look away, but then there's those times where you lock eyes and you realize they're not that different than me. Their needs may be dramatic. They may be very different than me. But when you look in their eyes and you see them, you realize they have a heart that beats just like mine, and they have an eternal destiny just like mine. And when we see those people and we do what Jesus did, we can see the vulnerable people who need healing and care about them. Sometimes we need to be reminded about one person at a time. In a few weeks, a cardiac care center is going to open that'll be the only such facility in northern Ghana because of partnerships with you and other churches like you and individuals. And I like to just hear the story about a little boy whose mom's name is Jamilia. Oh, it's this. This is the video. They asked me to tell them when the videos were. This is the Ghana video.
Say averagely in a month, cardiac complications may be responsible for about 5 to 10% of our mortalities.
As a doctor, it is so sad to break such a news. It's almost impossible for them.
How do you manage properly a patient with cardiac conditions?
I see patients that have heart disease almost every day who are not able to afford the appropriate medical care. Most of them are not even diagnosed.
I experience cardiac heart disease, so I understand what it's like to have such a condition and not have the resources to support treatment. This condition should not be a death sentence.
There's no single center that manages cardiac complications in the northern sector of Ghana.
And that is why CLT is partnering with the Winchi Hospital to set up a cardiac heart disease facility to support the northern half of the country.
It is a critical need, and so this opportunity to partner with Changing Lives Together would be a welcome opportunity for our clients.
This facility will literally save thousands of lives.
If I show your friend, you can meet us, my love.
And So because of partnership with churches like you, individuals like you, and changing lives together, her Jamelia's little boy has had that care, has had that treatment, and the facility is going to be opening. They're actually done with construction, and they're working on putting the acquiring all the right equipment, supplies, and staffing it right now. And so this should be open by this summer. And that's because we can care about one vulnerable person who needs healing at a time. And that opens the door for the gospel. What I love is that project in Ghana, Changing Lives Together, is not a health care ministry. They're a gospel preaching, preacher training, church planting ministry that saw this need and nobody kept doing it. And they've worked together to help a hospital at a cardiac care center. We love stories like that. And so as we see those types of things, it brings us to what Jesus also saw, is he saw a solution. In Matthew chapter 9, verse 2, it was the next time the word saw was used. And it says that Jesus had this teaching moment where he was in a house and it was crowded. He was in his own hometown. And you may remember this story is where the crowd is so thick around them and everybody's there. There's scribes and Pharisees inside the house. And the crowds of people around it trying to get to Jesus were so vast that four friends got their friend who was paralyzed. And they tried to get him to Jesus. And there are some obstacles to get to Jesus. First, this man couldn't walk. Secondly, they had to carry him. Third, they got to where Jesus was, and you couldn't get to him because of the crowd. So they went up on the roof. They dug the hole in the roof. This is that story where they lowered him down to Jesus. And Jesus looks at this young man, and it says something different than the other passages. He doesn't refer to that Jesus saw the paralyzed man, which we know that he did. But Jesus saw something else. Look at it in Matthew 9, 2. It says, and Jesus seen their faith. Jesus, of course, saw the young man that needed healing. But Jesus also saw the solution. The solution was the four friends that brought their friend to Jesus. The solution was the four friends that took away the obstacles for his healing and brought their friend to Jesus. And Jesus did exactly what we're trying to do at FAME through your partnership for you on your behalf. Not just physical healing, but spiritual healing. And Jesus reversed it this time. Sometimes Jesus would heal people and then share the gospel. But this time, this young man is brought before him and says, seeing their faith, Jesus told the paralytic, have courage, son. Your sins are forgiven. Jesus went to the spiritual healing first this time. And then the Pharisees, the teachers, the law, scribes, what's he doing? Only God can forgive sins. So Jesus said, okay. To show you that I have the authority to forgive sins, he turned to the paralyzed man and he said, get up and walk. And he got up and he walked. Healing, spiritually and physically, are connected all throughout the Gospels. And they're connected all throughout the impact that you're having in your partnership with FAME around the world. Jesus saw a solution. He then referred to it after one of those crowd verses I mentioned. It says, when he saw the crowds, he felt compassion for them because they were distressed and dejected, like sheep without a shepherd. And then he said to his disciples, the harvest is abundant, but the workers are few. Therefore, pray the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into his harvest. And that's what your missions emphasis, your church is doing today, is that FAME is just one of the ways that you touch lives. We partner with IDES. We partner with missions around the world that work together in our strengthening ways that we can make the best impact in the harvest that's needed. I would say, and I bet you would agree, there are some people that are distressed and dejected, like sheep without a shepherd in the world today. Would you agree? That there's some in countries far away, and there's some that live right by us. There's some in our path that we see every day. And so, yes, today, I love to challenge you. How can you eliminate obstacles to the gospel globally? You can partner with partners like us. You're through your church. Some people do it individually. Some people collect medicine and supplies. A box of Tylenol and other vitamins and things are just set by the booth that you got. Some of you guys have collected. They're sitting out there today that someone gave. Maybe you have connections like Matt had to be able to get connections for medical equipment that we can come and get, and they can ship it all over the world. Maybe it's the partnership in any, you can go on one of our short-term trips. You can be the person that tells the gospel, teaches a health lesson. Or maybe you're a medical provider and you could be used by that in that way. There's all kinds of ways you could do it. But there's ways to eliminate obstacles to the gospel about people in your inner circle and the next one out, aren't there? There are people who've decided that the gospel isn't for them because of things that are obstacles now. They either don't believe the truth. They think there's science that says it's not true. Maybe they've been hurt desperately by someone that causes them to not be willing to even hear the gospel. You and I can be the ones to make a difference in that. A lot of times people will say, I couldn't do that. Well, Colossians chapter 1, verse 27 says, Christ in you is the hope of glory. Just maybe think about it a little bit that I want to let you know that God can use you is this. I have right here a very crisp, I did fold it once, so it has a crease in it because I had to put it in my pocket, a very crisp dollar bill. And I just like to give it to somebody. I don't care who. There you go. There you go. And so I can ask you a question. It isn't hard. First service made it harder than it needs to be. He's got a dollar there. How much is a dollar worth? Good answer. You're exactly right. So there's a pretty crisp, fairly new dollar bill that's his. It's no strings attached. It's yours. It is. And it's worth a dollar. And I also have a dollar that's been around a little while. It's a little bit wadded up. Matter of fact, it's kind of crumpled and torn. It's seen a few things. It's been a lot of places. It's a little travel weary. It's worn. It's been through some hard times. It's had some bad things happen to it. And I like to give it to somebody. Here you go. You need a dollar. You can go buy a fourth of a cup of coffee with that. How much is that dollar worth? The value of the dollar, 100 cents, doesn't change no matter how worn out it is. And you know what? I don't know what you've been through. I don't know how many places you've been, how many things you've seen, how torn, crumpled, wrinkled you may be. I just want to encourage you today that your value in God's eyes has not changed. He sees you. And your value, no matter what you've been through, as Colossians 1:27 says, Christ in you is the hope of glory. Maybe today, you just need to recommit to seeing others, maybe even yourself, the way God sees you. Let's pray together. Dear God, I just thank you for this wonderful church family that cares for one another, cares for crowds, and cares for one at a time. God, we just pray your blessing on each one today as we consider how much you value us. In Jesus' name, amen.
Jeff mentioned from the book of Colossians, Christ in you, the hope of glory. He also mentioned in the context of his sermon, Jesus saw a solution. Have you ever viewed yourself as a solution? We're getting ready to sing a song and then after that take communion. And I want to challenge you to think about something. And the challenge is this. In fact, there are the three questions at the bottom of his outline. Who do you see? Who can you carry? And the last question is, what obstacle to the good news can you eliminate? What obstacle to the good news can you eliminate in someone's life? Those are some questions I want you to contemplate, to think about as our service continues this morning. Garrett?